Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, guys. Today we're joined by Lauren Gresser, who is CEO of DemDX. It's great to have you join us today. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to do this with us.
Delighted to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure. We've got a really interesting chat ahead of us. I mean, I've been doing a lot of research into this kind of healthcare tech space recently. It's fascinating. So we've got a lot to talk about. But I think, you know, for the listeners' sake, and to get the ball rolling a little bit, could you give us a bit of insight into DemDX and the service that you provide with it?
Yes. So DemDX stands for Demonstrating Diagnostics. We've been in operation since 2015, and we work in the medical clinical setting to support the wider healthcare workforce to take on more clinical front-end responsibility. So that means that when a patient falls ill and needs to see a healthcare professional, they don't necessarily have to see a doctor. They can see maybe a nurse practitioner or a paramedic or an advanced practitioner.
Excellent. So you're not from a technical background per se, are you? Are you from a medical background?
Yes. So my background covers both business and medicine, but I did. I'm a doctor who then went into tech almost because that was the answer to the problem that we were looking to solve.
So it's very much problem first and then solution second.
Well, like many things, I suppose now in the 21st century, a lot of the solutions come using tech, and we're delighted, you'll probably come on to this, but we're delighted to have been honoured with the AI, Artificial Intelligence Award, the very first award that NHSX and NIHR issued earlier this year to develop the tech side of this and to add on the AI side of things to make it more powerful. So absolutely, technology is at the heart of our proposition.
Amazing. Do you think I've started to notice it now, but in the professional healthcare industry, do you think we're on a tipping point where we're going to see loads of technology services to help out?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think there's been a huge amount behind the scenes of testing and clinical validation. And I think a lot now are in the pipeline to go through the regulatory process to then actually being used in the clinical practice. So as everyone will have been following with the COVID-19 and the launch of the vaccines, there's one stage, which is the sort of the research, the development, and then obviously you have to go through the validation and safety from a regulatory perspective. So I think the huge amount of actual digital technology that has to go through the same processes as a pacemaker or a vaccine to get the regulatory approvals. And I think, yes, absolutely, we're at the tipping point of starting to see some of those come onto the market.
Yeah, and, you know, through the research that I've been doing, I've found a lot of crazy, so advanced things that are, like, kind of supposedly about to happen. And some of it seems too good to be true almost. I mean, I read an article today which was that using 5G, we'll be able to do surgery from different continents.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's right. And also already there's a lot of different interchanges when you do surgery. So already you can have different surgeons from different locations actually participating or guiding. So from in the surgical field, there'll be a combination of robotics, and as robotics take over, then the sort of the user can be located in all kinds of different places. Absolutely,
it's just amazing, and like we were saying before, it's very much on the cusp of some amazing things that are going to be coming out of this space, and kind of intertwining technology and healthcare is fascinating. But I just want to get back onto DemDX and a little bit more about that. As you came from a medical background, we touched on it a bit before, but how did you actually manage to create the technology involved? Was it a case of, you know, just reaching out to people that kind of were professionals in this space, or did you learn a lot of it yourself to get it off the ground?
So from our perspective, the founders were myself and a CTO who had the technology background. So I think it's very hard to get traction quickly if you don't have someone at the heart of the team who's got some technological insights. So it was very much from the outset a sort of a team that developed it.
In the space of 5 years that it's been around for, I mean, was it a really quick, steep progression, or was it quite a slow progression to where it is today?
So I think a lot,
because you've come a long way in the past five years.
Yeah, so we have. If I may sort of just take a step back and just explain a bit more around the technology, because it helps understand how our development sort of path has happened, is what we're doing is we are a clinical reasoning support platform. And whereas there are others out there that allow, and what does that mean? That means that when a healthcare professional is faced with a patient, they ask the right questions, think about the right examinations to potentially do or investigations, and then they get sent to the next kind of appropriate place. And there are a lot of providers that do something similar, and it's almost like a pathway or a tick box. And we wanted to come to the sort of problem in a different way. The problem is, how do we provide consistency of care? So how do we make sure that people are making the similar decisions or the safe decisions? And there are a lot of providers that allow sort of tick boxes system. And we were coming to it from a different way, saying, well, we would like to ensure that when a healthcare professional is taking a clinical decision, they actually understand the reasoning behind it. So they have training going on at the same time. And because that's what we wanted to do, so we're sort of empowering them in a fundamental way, not just so that they can sort of tick boxes, but they can actually understand and learn from that process sort of on the job, as it were. That required us to really get close to all these different specialities and experts and ask them to help us build up those different pathways. So it's been, we've been going since for the last 5 years, but probably a good 3 years of those have been really in R&D. Obviously R&D goes on the whole time, but a lot of it's been around working with different specialists, I mean, medical specialists, to understand their clinical reasoning and then translate that into sort of algorithms that we can then embed and add AI to. So the development has been, of the 5 years, probably, yeah, more than I would have thought from the outset, has been around the R&D of making this sort of usable and the content rigorous enough. And then the other aspect that I learned a huge amount about, which I hadn't sort of thought about, was the UX of things and how to make sure that the users, it's intuitive enough, for the users enjoy doing it. And that's a whole field in itself that I was sort of unfamiliar with. But you sort of understand how Google put their money, you know, understanding, you know, what a button looks like and makes it appealing, and people know what to do when they see it appear on the screen.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It sounds like you might be taking a different career into tech now.
Well, as a CEO, you have to vaguely know what's going on, but it's fascinating how every aspect of the product has to be considered and tested.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm interested in, you know, before this application was built, and what was the procedure before this? Was it all manual? Was it analog on pen and paper?
Yes. So I think where we sit is we're very novel. So it's not like that we're doing a replacement. What happened in the past is, well, a lot in the, depending on how far back you go, but traditionally it was a doctor who was doing this role. I mean, going way a bit back, and they would have gone to medical school and they had some on-the-job training, clinical training, and it would have been this kind of intuitive. They would have sort of, they would know it, right? And it would be one of those things that they would have of course, made mistakes. They would have learned from their mistakes, but it was something that if they needed to look something up, they would look it up on, you know, on NICE guidelines. But fundamentally, it was something that one assumes that you, that comes with the clinical training. And where we step in is a recognition across the NHS, but also other health systems, that actually there aren't enough doctors that can be trained. There are staff shortages. And how do we deliver the care that we need for our population, recognizing the limitations in some of the workforce? And the answer is to upskill and to give more clinical responsibility to the wider healthcare workforce. Now, it's not feasible for them to have gone through the years and training, et cetera, et cetera. And also specialities are becoming more complex. So our product sits to support them. If they were to do the same role, I don't know, 5-10 years ago, as you say, they would have had to look up 5 different sources. They might have been up, you know, on the internet or on the NICE pathways. So we provide that information in a sort of concise one-stop shop, as it were, that they can then sort of use and get familiar with.
Mm. Excellent. So with the AI awards that you've just won, what does that mean for DemDx? What does that mean for the future of the business?
So for us, this is huge. I mean, A, it's a sort of testament to the work we've done to date and our vision and ambition that we have. So the recognition is huge. The funding is very valuable, and it definitely allows us now to build out our AI algorithms. So up until a year or so ago, they were all sort of fixed algorithms. And this will allow us to keep the sort of what we call is our secret sauce or what's unique about us, this sort of transparency, but then adding in the accuracy of the AI algorithms. What does that mean in real terms, in real words? What it means is if someone comes in with, let's say, a head injury, let's say they've had a fall, in a very basic system, you might have a set of questions and you might have come in to A&E or I might be visiting your home and you've had a head injury. And I might have a set of 5 questions. I say yes, no, yes, no. And then my answer is I need to take you to A&E or not. What we've done as our first stage, as we said, here are the questions. And it's because we're thinking of this possibility. There could be a bleed on the brain, or we're thinking there could be, you know, an eye injury. So we explain why you're asking those questions, which is the first bit. And the second bit that we can overlay with AI is that we can then reclassify the importance of certain questions and reclassify the likelihood of different possible conditions based on what we're seeing from past data. So it just means that our framework and our algorithms are way more accurate and can be adapted to different locations and different seasons as well. So, you know, this can be used in the States, it could be used in Asia and in Europe, and we can localize it to the different settings.
Wow, it's fascinating. And what intrigues me about this is the amount of data that you must have to acquire to put into this technology, because there's so many moving parts and so many different outcomes for so many different situations. So how have you managed to acquire that data? Is that just, you know, manually putting that in, or is that through, you know, how have you managed to research that and actually get it into the app?
So it's a combination. So yes, we've had over 200 specialists working on the platform in the last 5 years.
Wow.
We've had, so God knows how many hours of expertise. We've also had been lucky enough to have a number of different NHS partners and working with us. So we've worked with Moorfield and have refined algorithms with them. We're working with other sort of GP practices. But basically, a lot of it has been this sort of the body of clinical experts and consultants and registrar. The value of that, A, is does allow the transparency that I've mentioned and some context, some clinical context, but also a big challenge in the medical field is something that might is to understand that the body is a whole and not just different specialities. So often, if you've got a problem with your knee, people will just send you to the orthopedic surgeon and they'll just think about it like that. Whereas actually, it could be an infection, it could be something else going on in your system, and it's very hard to fit something that might create, it might be linked to other systems, in something where it's very specialist focused and quite siloed. So part of what we try and do is allow to bridge across these different specialities as well.
Wow, it's amazing. So is this something that I presume it's going to have to be updated almost constantly?
Yes, I suppose one caveat to that is that we don't do any management. So that's one of the big aspects in the medical field that needs to be updated on a regular basis. So new drugs, new vaccines, new surgeries, new approaches, and we don't do any management. So we help at the front end when you're trying to work out what is wrong or what the problem is, and then it goes on to the specialty and then it's management. So if you think about it, you know, if you've got, I don't know, a cruciate ligament tear or you've got a heart attack, the things that present like that don't change over time, right? If you, you know, if you've got sort of, I don't know, radiating pain down the left arm and chest pain after running, you know, doing some exercise, then that those are signs. And also they're signs that bridge, you know, bridge locations and time. So from that perspective, we don't have to update a large proportion of it, but what we do have to update is some of the investigations change, but also now adding on the AI overlay means that we'll be adding a huge, even, you know, already we've got over 2,000 different diagnoses, over 50,000 different algorithmic pathways, and across 14 specialities. So already our basic, dare I say, algorithms are, as you say, unbelievably extensive. But when we add on AI, our next kind of few years we'll be adding on AI data, which will make that exponential.
The AI data that you're going to add on, that learns from when people use it and what experiences they have with it, is that right?
We'll be partnering with different hospitals and seeing how patients present, and then using that data to serve as our platform. So it won't be learning directly from our platform. We'll be just pulling it, working the algorithms, and then embedding the algorithms into our platform.
It's amazing. It's really far ahead of the curve for what it is. It's really it's phenomenal, you know. And I'm just thinking, you know, because it's such a big challenge to get this thing off the ground. So if you can think back to when you first started this venture 5 years ago, is there anything that you'd do differently if you could kind of rewind time and start again?
So I think, it's a bit hard to answer that, knowing that, you know, of course you are where you are today because you've gone down all those different paths and you've learned from them. There are two things really not necessarily related at all to the field that I'm in, the medical field, but just more to sort of the startup world and doing startup, is just how hard it is, which and there's this great book by Horowitz about the hard things about hard things, which is excellent for anyone who's interested in doing startup or tech startup. And I mean that in the sense that so much of one's life or one's career is about chance, and that you can't control everything. So if good things happen, that's wonderful. And, you know, it's a reflection of your hard work, but also chance and vice versa. I think one of the things I was very, very lucky with the CTO, and who, as I mentioned, was key to making this work as a co-founder. I think I would have, if I was to do something differently, I would have maybe worked on getting the right team from the beginning. I know it sounds very trite, but the team is everything. And we were very lucky with a number of members of the team, but we're always challenged by, you know, reduced, limited budgets, and, you know, it's a very stressful and volatile environment. So it's hard to find the right team. But obviously, as you grow and you establish yourself, it's then easier to attract those with the right skills.
Yeah, and I always ask what's the biggest challenge that you faced, but I think, I don't know, today I want to ask the opposite side of that and be a little bit more positive maybe. So what's the greatest achievement that you've had on this journey? Or what do you find most rewarding?
Well, obviously the thing I find the most rewarding is for the product being used and the product being valued. I mean, that's, you know, we're all doing it so we can help. I mean, you don't enter the medical profession without having a real sense of wanting to sort of have impact and do good. And so this is our way and my way very personally of helping and touching more patients than I could if I was in at the front end sort of just seeing patients myself. So that's my and the company's biggest ambition and biggest reward is seeing it, you know, making patients either patients having to avoid surgeries or avoid interventions or avoid admissions because a clinician was supported by this, or the vice versa. They got to treatment faster and had few false dead ends, but thanks to the platform.
Amazing. And it's great to see that you're making such a real difference in the real world. It's phenomenal. You don't really see that too much with startups these days. I mean, I think people get too caught up with fancy new technology and all that kind of thing. But what you're doing with DemDx is absolutely phenomenal.
Thank you.
Yeah, keep up the amazing work. I'm really excited to follow this up to, you know, in the years to come and see where it ends up. It's a really exciting journey that you're on.
Definitely is. Definitely loads of ups and downs.
Yeah. Can imagine,
Thank you. Thank you for Ben.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.